Hey everyone, Jeremy here. I wanted to raise light to when we here at Press Start and the One More Game podcast dropped the ball, and we did so in this episode. In our discussion on the Hogwarts Legacy state of play, we neglected to talk about the harmful transphobic language J.K. Rowling, the creator of the Harry Potter universe, has done and continues to do. We in no way support her words. We at Press Start and the One More Game podcast support the LGBTQ plus community and believe that trans rights are human rights. In an effort to help raise awareness for the LGBTQ plus community, we included links to a few charities in the podcast description that we hope you consider donating to. We want to apologize to all those impacted by our negligence. Press Start strives to improve every day, and here is where we work to continue to improve. We will continue to do our best to make sure all aspects are covered in our videos, articles, and discussions. I hope you accept our sincere apology and know that we'll do our best to make sure it doesn't happen again. Welcome everyone to the One More Game podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Jeremy Culver, aka Darcy, and joining me is a special guest, the queen of the team, Winnie, my wife. Winnie, how are you doing?
Good. Excited to be on the podcast.
Yeah, so this is, of course, your first time doing a podcast. You've never done it before, but you are one of my, of course, I shouldn't say one of my, the biggest supporter that I have. So you've listened to a lot of episodes. So how do you feel about being on your first podcast?
Well, it's awesome being a super fan to be on your show. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Well, that's good to hear. And for yourself, for people that don't know a little bit about you, talk about yourself. Explain a little bit about who you are. It could be some minor details, be big details, whatever you wanted to talk about.
Well, I love video games. I actually used to play a lot more before I started working and before school, but like back in high school, I got my first PS2 or my first gaming system was PS2. But prior to that, actually, I had a Nintendo, old school Nintendo from my uncle. But so we started off playing that and then PS2 and I played a lot of games and then went to school. So then I didn't get to play a lot anymore. And then, just over the years, still trying to just keep up on the games. And obviously, you know a lot about games. So that's how I get my gaming news. And
Before when I was in news, you would always be like, hey, what's going on in the world? And I'd have to explain to you. Now it's gotten to the point where it's what's going on in video games? And I had to explain to you all the time. So,
basically.
But at least you're a faithful listener. So you always get that information when it comes to this and all the video game stuff that we have to talk about. But everyone, thank you so much for tuning in here to the One More Game podcast. This is a podcast that is centered around making sure you're informed about all the video game news happening around the world. Whether it's Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation, or PC, if there's news that you need to know about, we'll make sure that you know about it. When you're listening to this on your podcast service, make sure you hit the subscribe button or the follow button, depending on what your service offers. And if your podcast service allows reviews, please leave a 5-star review and tell everyone why you love the One More Game podcast, because we really enjoy bringing this to you each and every Friday. If you'd like to be part of the show by asking a question or suggesting a topic for discussion, head on over to pressstartnews.net/onemoregame and fill out the submission form, and your submission could be used on the next episode. If this is your first time here to the podcast, welcome to the podcast. I hope you enjoy your listen and I hope you enjoy your stay. If you are returning, you already know what it is. We start off every single podcast talking about what we've been playing lately. So Winnie, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Animal Crossing as usual. I guess the word a lot isn't accurate, but that's basically what I've been playing. I've been playing that since it came out. March 2020. Yeah. I have not changed a single villager out. I have the same villagers that I've had since I started, so I've been playing that. Actually, just logged on today, got all my dailies, and then, the other game I finally finished was Tell Me Why. I was playing that on Xbox Game Pass. I started it last year, and I only just finished it now, like, as our Game Pass membership or whatever you want to call it was running out, so we had to purchase another one. That was actually really good, so if you guys haven't played that yet, you should check it out. It's story-based, like, choice-based adventure about a pair of siblings and like what happens in their families. It's pretty cool. And then the other night I checked out, I think it's called Unpacking on Xbox.
Yes.
It's just a chill game where like kind of like some old school graphics and you are this character that you don't see, but you're moving into different stages of life. It seems like so far. So it was like childhood and then like school and college. So you're just unpacking things, putting things in the house. So that was pretty relaxing and fun as well.
Now for that one, because I know that I downloaded it because I had seen that it was really good reviews or a lot of people liked it. And I figured that it might be up your alley for wanting to kind of chill after work. I guess with it, do you feel like the controls played smoothly on the console? Because I know the game originally was like a PC game. So I didn't know, does it feel like when you're trying to pack stuff or put stuff away, does it feel like it's intuitive and easy to maneuver?
I think so. There isn't a lot of direction on how to do stuff, so you just kind of play as you go type of thing. I've only played about an hour, so I don't think I noticed anything weird with the controls. But I mean, of course, when you use the joystick, you're not placing things as accurate as using like the cross pad. So that was the only thing I think that I had noticed. But I don't remember if you can use cross pad for packing things. I was using the joystick mainly.
Okay. Yeah. And so for myself, I've been playing, of course, a lot of Babylon's Fall still enjoying it, still having a blast when it comes to that game. On top of it, Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin came out. I've been playing that over on my stream, which you could go check out at twitch.tv/Darsay28, and I'm enjoying it. The story is ridiculous so far, which I will fully admit is actually kind of a knock for me because I love Final Fantasy and I love their stories. So Jack, the main character, he is so far like your typical meme character. And I know a lot of people, if you're looking online, they'll tell you that same thing. But like one instance and is there's this part where this character named Neon is telling this like heartfelt story about Chaos killing off like her companions, the people that she was with over and over, and she decided to actually embrace Chaos and become Chaos so that hopefully one day someone would destroy her or kill her. And she says this whole thing and Jack, instead of like responding to anything, was just like, and this is literally what he says, he goes, "Bullshit," and turns on music and walks away. And I just like, it was so funny. It really caught me off guard. Jeez. But it's like, that's not the typical story, like Final Fantasy stories that you get. So I don't know, like hopefully the story gets a little bit better. Like I don't want it, I don't feel like it has to be amazing per se, but I just want it to be a little bit better so far. But combat wise, it's so awesome. It feels so satisfying as you destroy the monsters that you fight and the enemies that you come into contact with. My only gripe though, and it's something that's widespread, it's said all across on the internet, is I do feel like equipment drops way too much, way too often. And that is a problem that's plagued the Neo series, which Team Ninja, who made Stranger of Paradise, made the Neo series. It's the same thing that's an issue in that one. You just get too much equipment way too often that sometimes you just have a hard time figuring out, well, should I equip this? Should I not equip this? And you kind of have to make some slight adjustments. And so like, I will recommend for those that do pick it up, which I do recommend picking it up because it is still a great game. As I'm saying, the combat is amazing. In the settings, go to equipment level and change that to only pick up equipment that is 2 stars or higher. It will help out tremendously. Yes, you're going to pass up some equipment that would benefit you when it comes to things, but it comes so frequently. It'll help save your space. And then the final thing, I can't talk too much about it, but I can at least announce that I've been playing in the Steel Rising playtest that is going on currently. That is an upcoming RPG from Spiders, which is the people who made Greedfall. And again, I can't talk about full details because it's under an NDA, but they did announce that playtest is going on. And I will just say, to summarize it real quick, it is a lot of fun. So hopefully that game does hit its release date, which is supposed to release in June. But there are some issues inside that playtest that hopefully can be rectified before June, but we'll know. I'm not a game developer, so I don't know at the very limit what those things are going to be like. But that's what we've been playing lately. We are going to move along and head to our show topics, which our game catalog has quite the list, as I always say in a lot of episodes, but this one really does. We have reactions to Sony's State of Play focused on Hogwarts Legacy, Russia making a move to try to combat the sanctions that have been going on against them. And you might be like, why is that video game related? Well, we'll tell you about it here in a little bit. The Initiative may be having some issues when it comes to their Perfect Dark reboot. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands is going to be a full cross-play title, and Elden Ring hits a milestone when it comes to their sales. But that is all coming up here on the One More Game podcast, and we're going to get started right away with our main game catalog, and that is the Hogwarts Legacy State of Play that just wrapped up. So, Winnie, you joined me on the stream, which, again, you guys can go check out at www.twitch.tv/Darsay28. But if you missed the stream, we are going to be having a video version over on YouTube that you can check out, which links can be found all across our various social media platforms. But Winnie, we had you on the podcast because, as I told people on the stream and in the YouTube video, you are probably, if not the biggest Harry Potter fan that I know. So I wanted you as part of the stream to see what was going on, see what was announced, and now it's time for you to finally fully unpack it, because we did not fully unpack it on those streams. So tell me, what was your takeaways from that stream?
So I thought it looked super cool. I thought the graphics were awesome. The effects with like the spells during combat was really neat as well. The thing that was brought up was like the timeline of the game. It's unclear when it takes place, but they talk about like a child in the game. And so I'm wondering if that's Harry. So could it be before Harry's time? And so, maybe, but it looks really neat because then you get to make your own character, and it's open world, so you really just get to explore Hogwarts and beyond. And I think, like, for most of us fans, when we read the books and watch the movies, we're kind of like, man, what's beyond these walls? And then, like, for me, I've been to the Orlando Universal Studios Harry Potter world, and so, like, you get a glimpse of the their castle, Hogwarts Court Castle, and in Hogsmeade, but then you're kind of like, man, I wish I could go beyond that. So I think that game kind of gives us that.
Now, for you as a mega fan, that's, you know, really, again, that loves Harry Potter, has a lot of Harry Potter things, mm-hmm. has a lot of the Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
When you were watching that unfold, and I know that when they did the behind the scenes discussion with the developers, they mm-hmm. talked about having to try to find ways to really connect Hogwarts together that isn't always fully detailed in the books, because, of course, as we know, the books can only follow a certain part, you know, and, yeah. and there's not been a world that's really created mm-hmm. around that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, how did Hogwarts look in this displaying of it? Did it fit what your mind envisioned as you read those books and listened to the movies and stuff? Did it fit what you were kind of envisioning of Hogwarts?
Well, I mean, so I never really was able to envision by reading. So, like, it was only until the movies came out that I was like, man, this is what it's supposed to look like. And so, for me, I saw glimpses of what the movies gave us, you know, with the Great Hall and the stairs that moved around, the moving portraits. So, seeing that in the game was really neat. But then, as the developers said, they added a lot of detail that how they envision Hogwarts and the surrounding lands to be. So, that was super cool to see, because, you know, that kind of also brings to life, I think, for fans, what it might look beyond there. And just for me, I can't, you know, for myself, I can't imagine that stuff when I'm reading it. So, like, when someone puts it out there for me, I'm like, hey, that looks like that's how it should be.
Now, before I kind of give my thoughts and stuff, how did you feel about knowing the fact, again, we don't know the timeline when this actually takes place, but mm-hmm. how did you feel about the fact kind of not seen many, if any at all, basically, of recognizable characters. As you talked about on the stream, you only recognized the ghost. But when it comes to professors and just the overall world, so to speak, when it comes to those characters, did that hurt your excitement at all? Or did it change just kind of how your viewpoint of that game was?
I mean, I would have been excited to see, like, some of the original characters in the game, but, I mean, we already have games that have that, so, like, for this to be action RPG in open world, like, I don't think that I mind that it's, like, different people, because the timeline is different, and it's still Hogwarts, it's still the magic, and it's still, you know, all those details and values and things that we see within the Harry Potter world that is expressed, in a game. Mm-hmm. So I don't think like that hurt my excitement at all, but you know, this gives us an opportunity to see beyond what we see in the movies.
And then my last thing real quick before I again give my thoughts is you talked about, obviously, it's really cool, you really like it, you really enjoy what you've seen of it, but release date is holiday 2022, so between now and the supposed release dates, let's just envision that it's December, right? Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want to see from the game to, you know, put you at a higher level of excitement than you already are? Is there anything that you would like to see, whether it's, again, maybe introducing some of those characters, maybe more fleshed out of what that storyline is going to be? Just anything that kind of jumps out that you think would take, let's just say, your excitement level, I'm going to say right now it's at a 10, yeah, but take it to 11.
Well, I do want to know more about the storyline, because it's... it's, you know, not something I think that we see in the movies, but also it'd be really neat if they like let you play Quidditch in the game, because that's a big part. I feel that is a big part of the books and the movies, so that would be really neat if that was in there. And then if I could, like, you know, if I had my own vault too at the Gringotts Bank, that'd be pretty neat.
I wonder. I feel like they might do that, because that would make sense, yeah, with just the fact with any of these action RPGs, right? Yeah. You always get a lot of equipment and gold to buy things. But I could see them like somehow mixing in, you know, storing your money, yeah, in this vault.
I'm going to like Diagon Alley if, you know, I don't know where that fits in the timeline. I'm assuming that's been around for a very long time as well. So like being able to go there, to go to the wand shop, go to my bank, that'd be pretty neat too.
Yeah, so for myself, as a person who's not a huge Harry Potter fan, I thought that was awesome. I really liked what I saw. I am a huge RPG fan, both turn-based and action and strategic, you know, all of those type of RPGs, but just RPGs in general, I'm a huge fan of. So seeing that unfold, the combat looked awesome. As you said, the visual effects with the wand spells just really stood out, and I loved the ability to combo things. Like, you saw the one where he, like, you know, shot a spell out that seemed to, like, paralyze the person, and then he, like, did a spell that, like, pulled them close and then bashed them into the ground, you know. That was really cool. I also did like the fact that they talked about, you know, building relationships. You'll be able to bring companions on quests. So I wonder how limited that will be in scale, but when it's put into place, just where does that change mission structures or how the game unfolds? You know, if you, let's say, for instance, I don't know the characters that they actually introduced. They said the names, but I don't remember. So I'm going to just use as if it was Ron, for instance, but I know Ron's not in the game. But like, if I was having Ron come on a mission with me, does that change that mission if I brought Hermione instead? You know, or does it just seamlessly, you know, the character, so to speak, the companion doesn't play a huge role in that mission that you bring them along with? But I would imagine, based on the character you bring along, if this is the way that they actually entail it to be, will that change how the characters may approach the mission, the dialogue options that go through in the missions, you know, because each of these characters have their own personality. So you would hope that it's not just, you know, basically copy and paste the character in there, where it's like all the same dialogue options happen and all the same things, but it's just a different voice actor and a different character model. You know, again, Ron has a different personality than Hermione. So if I brought Hermione, right, Hermione might be like, oh, we have to think about these things more. Like, you don't want to just run in and jump in, where Ron would be like, let's just go do it, you know, type of thing. So I hope that that actually plays more of a factor when it comes to each of the missions. But it also, I did say it on the stream, but they didn't call it out. But the fact that you can bring a companion does open the realm of possibilities that you can play some of this game, if not most of the game, with a second player. You know, if you bring a companion, can your friend with you pick up a controller and control that companion? They may not be able to do it for the whole game, because again, it is supposed to be an open world, like Singularity type experience. It's not a multiplayer experience, but maybe there is local co-op for that reason of being able to co-op together and experience those aspects. For you question before I kind of go into a little bit more detail as well, Hogsmeade, I know it's the town from my experience of watching the movies and, of course, reading the books. It's the town that's like kind of close by that I remember, like, always, like every winter they go there and they buy butter beer and stuff. But like, do they ever go more into detail on like Hogsmeade itself when it comes to like the layout or like other shops that might be there?
Yeah, I mean, because there's like the three broomsticks they go to for the butter beer. There's like some stuff that takes place in there in the books too. They always take a train there, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I haven't read the books in a while, but like they do talk about some of the shops that are there. There's like a candy shop. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because like for me, kind of going off of what you said earlier, but like for me, I didn't remember much of Hogsmeade, but I just remembered the town. So getting to explore some of those areas that I don't recall the details, it's going to be cool kind of getting that experience of like, oh, like, so this is kind of the layout of the town, or like, oh, you know, like you said, the three brooms, right?
It'll be like three broomsticks.
Yeah, the three broomsticks. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's where the three broomsticks is in Hogsmeade. It's not, you know, just right at the edge of town type of thing. Before we move on, I do got to ask you, I asked you some of those things that you want to see, that you liked and stuff, but was there anything that you did see that you were just not, you didn't like, or that you were just not a big fan of?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. But I just thought of something. What if the child they talk about is like Voldemort? Like Tom Riddle?
Ooh.
Because he was not at all in like any of the gameplay or mentioned at all. You know, because he was a student at Hogwarts. Well, yeah, so maybe. Anyway, that's what I thought about.
Yeah, I mean, that could be, because then it would work out in the fact that you don't see Lily or Snape or anything like that, right? Like, you know, Voldemort couldn't be a student yet. So as the child, right, in this speaking, he might be too young to be at the school.
Like he's a baby, yeah. So
correct.
He wasn't there yet. I don't know.
Maybe. So that could be a great way to tie in to some of those experiences. But I do think, though, if that is the case, right, we would need to see at some point, and maybe they're holding it off because it would be a big reveal, that Dumbledore is at that school somehow.
Yeah, but yeah, because, right, because it wouldn't be Harry as a child, because then Dumbledore is already there and we didn't see Dumbledore.
Correct.
Or McGonagall.
Correct.
Or Hagrid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either like way before him or it's after.
Yeah. And that's where I do think the if your theory, which is a great theory, if Voldemort is the child that is mentioned in that one scene, then all these other characters you described are too young, so to speak, to be at Hogwarts yet, but Dumbledore wouldn't. So Dumbledore, at some point, and again, they may be holding off the reveal, but he at some point should be shown in a future reveal, and that may confirm your suspicions. So
we shall see.
Again, release date is holiday 2022, and I look forward to it. Is this going to be a day one buy currently?
Probably.
There we go. All right. Well, we don't know when this game is going to be coming out, and we also don't know when the game may be coming out in Russia. But Russia is making some changes to try to circumvent the sanctions that have been put on them by various countries. We're going to IGN for this article. This is written by Ryan Leston, and it is Russia reportedly legalizes piracy of games, movies, and more. Russia is reportedly easing its copyright laws to offset sanctions imposed by Western nations in response to its invasion of Ukraine. In doing so, it is effectively legalizing piracy of games, movies, TV shows, and more. The Russian Ministry of Economic Development proposed relaxing piracy legislation earlier this week to circumvent the sanctions. Quote, the possibility of lifting restrictions on the use of intellectual property contained in certain goods, the supply of which to Russia is limited, is being considered, said the ministry. This will smooth out the impact of the market of breaks in supply chains, as well as the shortage of goods and services that arose due to new sanctions by Western countries. According to local media in Russia, the government has now announced that Russian companies have no obligation to pay patent holders for the use of intellectual property from any countries that have sanctioned the country. This has effectively legalized piracy across the nation. State-backed newspaper reports that the new law allows Russian firms to use innovation from unfriendly countries without paying to use their intellectual property. And when it comes to Hollywood movies, it looks as though Russian people will be free to pirate them, and Russian politician Dmitry Ionin has now even suggested that the country may unblock the torrenting site RuTracker to help Russian pirates Hollywood films. Quote, since many Western studios have refused to release new films in Russia, the parliamentarian believes that thanks to the torrent tracker, users will be able to watch Hollywood films, end quote, reports the paper. There are some other things that should be read here, so go check those out, but I do just want to pass along, of course, many sites like Twitch has suspended payments to Russian streamers. Microsoft, Sony, and many more gaming and entertainment staff have suspended sales and hardware sales of games and hardwares across Russia, and there are many other things going on. So, Winnie, I do want to ask you, how do you feel about Russia taking this measure, or what goes through your head when you hear Russia is taking this measure to try to circumvent the sanctions that are being put against the country in an effort to try to stop and have Russia pull out of their invasion of Ukraine?
I guess I'm not surprised that they would do something like this, but it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, it's frustrating to hear that because you know, obviously folks work hard to put their product out and, you know, it shouldn't be pirated. And then that makes me think, you know, like who's putting it up, right? So is it people within the States in the first place, which we know, like it happens, like there's torrent sites and stuff like that. But like, you know, the fact that, you know, folks will put it up there and then people from Russia can grab it. I mean, I'm not sure, but I don't know if that, I wonder actually if that will, you know, with them allowing pirating, if that's going to make an impact, like, you know, is the state's going to be like, oh, we're going to, you know, undo these sanctions and stuff like that. I don't know if that will happen, but I think, you know, what else are they going to do after this?
Yeah.
Because that's what goes through my mind.
Yeah. I definitely wonder what the long-term, ramifications of this will be, because, mm-hmm. It's one thing, trying not to touch on the aspect of Ukraine at the moment, right? Because obviously we both agree and have felt, and it's why we've said also here on the podcast that our hearts and our thoughts are with Ukraine. We support Ukraine and hope that Russia stops this and pulls out. But just not touching on that aspect right now, what is this going to be like when Russia eventually does stop?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you've already opened the door or lifted these restrictions, so to speak, on piracy
mm-hmm.
in the country.
Mm-hmm.
When you do pull out, does Russia then revert back to the old methods of implementing piracy and copyright laws? Because then I feel like you create this windy road, because
yeah.
Does that now you know, go into the past and show, like, okay, well, anything that you downloaded from when we lifted it to now is okay, or are they going to say, hey, this, it's not okay now? But then if it isn't okay, or if they're saying it isn't okay, well, if they're saying it is okay, then in the future, if someone downloads something from this time frame, so let's say it's, you know, now, Final Fantasy Origin, for instance, since I talked about it, if someone downloads and pirates that game, but they download it in a future time frame, is it okay because of this gap in the time that it was covered? I think it just creates a very sticky situation, and not trying to say that Russia shouldn't or should do this, because of course they're going to do whatever their country feels, but I just feel like that would cause, this is going to cause so much legal grounds that does, you know, how would the states react to this come that time?
Yeah.
And in the grand scheme of things, like you said, obviously Russia's, the Ministry of Economic Development, they're thinking of doing this to try to circumvent the sanctions that are put against the country. But does that now make the U.S. or other countries go, oh, well, I guess we should lift our sanctions so that our stuff doesn't get pirated? Because, like, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like that would be basically taking a step back instead of trying to find ways to really get Russia to stop. I find it very interesting. Again, not talking about the actual invasion at this point, but just the legal loopholes and grounds and gray areas that this could cause, not just for now, but in the future, with this being the case.
Right.
With this also, in this discussion, I do got to ask you, as someone who is a huge show watcher and loves, you know, movies and, of course, games and stuff, do you think that this time frame, this gap, so to speak, that it may cause, do you think that this ends up hurting any kind of creative productions that you may be looking forward to? Like, do you think if you were a person who was creating a piece and you know that now Russia, like, which you're not releasing right now, it is allowing piracy, do you think that would hurt how you would go and approach the creative process, knowing that your stuff could be stolen there?
Oh, that's hard. I think, I'd be hesitant, right? But, like, if my intention initially was, like, I'm not going to release this in Russia anyway, like, that potential gain from, you know, the financial aspect of if I were to release in Russia or not, I don't think makes a difference, because if I was never going to release it there anyway and I was only going to sell this everywhere else, I would still hopefully, you know, gain the profits off of that. But then, you know, do I just let go of this whole, okay, it's getting pirated in Russia thing? But I guess part of me would also worry, if Russia's doing this, does this mean other countries are going to start doing it too?
Yeah. I think that's a tough question to answer. What I really hope doesn't happen is, I really hope that people in other countries don't try to take advantage of this situation.
Right.
So using, for instance, like a VPN to say that their location is in Russia to download it.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to use that to circumvent and take advantage of what is a obviously troubling and sad situation that's going on. So I hope that something gets figured out. As I said last week on the podcast, and we've said the week before, I hope Russia finally decides to leave Ukraine and stop the invasion, and we can get back to just, you know, not ignoring things that are going on in the world, because there's always troubles going on, but just get back to where we feel like we are back at a norm, because we are getting close to it with the pandemic, and now, you know, we just have another event going on. So again, our thoughts go out to the people of Ukraine. We stand with you, and hopefully this situation ends soon. Now to a different note, we are going to VGC for this article, the videogamechronicles.com. This is written by Andy Robinson, and we're talking about an Xbox studio where they have lost a lot of staff. This headline goes, insiders describe fast and furious exits from Xbox's Perfect Dark Studio. It goes as follows. Xbox's The Initiative Studio has seen a, quote, fast and furious wave of senior departures in the past 12 months, VGC has learned. As much as half of the core development team known to be working on the upcoming Perfect Dark reboot quit the company during the last year, or around 36 people, analysis of employee LinkedIn profiles have revealed. That includes most of the initiative's senior design team, including game director Dan Neuberger, design director Drew Murray, lead level designer Chris O'Neill, principal world builder Jolynn Myers, two senior system designers, a group of three former God of War designers, and more. And the turnover of top talent doesn't end in design. Perfect Dark's two most senior writers also recently quit. Analysis shows along the project's technical director, tech art director, lead gameplay designer, or engineer, excuse me, lead animator, QA lead, and more. According to LinkedIn, the initiative now has less than 50 people when you remove all the duplicates, former employees, and all that from their job listings, and currently just have three roles advertised on the website. Analysis suggests that it's hired around 12 people in the past 12 months. Now, the timing of these departures coincide with the September 2021 announcement that Crystal Dynamics has been signed to co-develop Perfect Dark. This, combined with the few job roles currently advertised at the initiative, suggests that the Tomb Raider developer is likely taking a much stronger lead than first thought on the project. Interviews with multiple former senior developers cited a lack of creative autonomy and slow development progress as the reason for their departures and described the wave of exits as said before, quote, fast and furious, with project momentum said to be heavily affected. So there is a lot of other things to be discussed in this article, a lot of other details. So I do recommend you go take this, read this, because it is quite lengthy. But Winnie, you did not know much about the Perfect Dark reboot, you know, the what this situation is going on. But I do have to ask you, what was your reaction when I first showed you this article for this podcast and you saw that basically half of the staff has left this company in the last 12 months?
Yeah, I was like, whoa, wow. Like, I don't know. Is it just because they've limited creative autonomy that they left, or does something else go on? Because you don't just lose half your staff. I mean, maybe. I mean, I can see that, right? Like, you lose autonomy, you really don't like where you're working, you can take your talents elsewhere, totally. But is there something more going on that we don't know about and that hasn't been revealed yet?
No, not at all. And it's also, as the article talks about, you know, a lot of these departures seem to come with that announcement that Crystal Dynamics was co-developing the game. And I know, again, you weren't, you know, closely following it at the time, but I remember when that announcement came out, there was a lot of discussions back and forth saying, you know, how they felt about this. And I, when I say how they, I mean gamers and fans of the series. And I myself said, this isn't good. Like, if the initiative was supposed to be the first development of a quadruple A game, which, you know, was a, is still, in my opinion, just a buzz term that they're trying to use, because triple A is, you know, your high quality game. Double A is a little bit lower than that. And of course, a single A is more like your indie games. But this quadruple A announcement, I thought, was, of course, a too high a bar to set. And then they announced this co-development, and I said, this means trouble. The development is not going well. If they are bringing in somebody to co-develop the game. And I remember specifically, I won't call out the person that said this, but I remember specifically one person responded back to me saying that I'm overreacting and that this does not mean anything. This is similar to somebody outsourcing some development as part of the game. And I said, no, when you announce a co-developer,
yeah,
you are clearly saying we have equal say or similar say in power. When you outsource something, you don't really typically announce that. You literally just have them in the credits. Like, that's just simple as that. So this announcement, I said, spelt disaster. They told me not. And this article is a big, in my opinion, and I hate being this person, but I told you so.
Yeah.
That this is something is going on at the initiative.
Right.
That is not going the way that Xbox thought.
Yeah, because you don't just lose half your staff.
Correct. And so I wonder also, like you said, and, you know, of course, there is not a whole lot of discussions here. The initiative management, you know, as they as part of some of these other things, again, I'm not going to read all of it. But the initiative says that, you know, they point to, of course, that it's an industry-wide challenge right now to bring in staff when it comes to COVID-19. They say here, the quote, "It's no small task to build a studio and reinvent a beloved franchise," studio head Daryl Gallagher said. "In creating the initiative, we set out to leverage co-development and partnerships to achieve our ambition, and we're really excited about all the progress we're seeing with our relationship with Crystal Dynamics. In this journey, it's not uncommon for there to be staffing changes, especially during a time of global upheaval over the last 2 years, and there's plenty more work in front of us to deliver a fantastic Perfect Dark experience to our players." There's more that they say there, but I look at the other companies that released games during the pandemic. There was never reports about losing half your staff. There was never reports about seeing top level, developers or staff members leaving all around the same time. So them using this quote, yes, it is correct. There is. Nationwide, right? Staffing issues that are going on because of the pandemic.
Great resignation.
Yes, there's a lot of issues that are going on with it. But other studios have been able to make it work and have staff on hand, whether it's they're working at the studio or they're working remotely to make these things happen. Why did they lose half their staff where these other studios didn't?
Yeah, exactly.
So for you, When you see this, obviously, again, there's a lot to this article, but what, as a person who doesn't follow this, where is your, I'm trying to think of the term, I'm having a brain fart right now, but where, how sure do you feel Perfect Dark is going to hit their rumored announcement of coming out next year?
I mean, with them saying that Crystal Dynamics is taking over, basically. I mean, I guess historically, how have they performed as a studio?
They've done pretty well, I would think.
I would think that if they're going to... I mean, if they're not, like, doing a complete overhaul, if they just take the reins now and go, I could see them producing it on time. I don't think there would be a delay. Especially if half your staff left and now you have the creative hold, right?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. I'm definitely think this is at the earliest 2024, because I just feel like with, again, just to kind of reiterate some of these job titles that we saw, game director, design director, lead level designer, senior system designers, principal world builder, senior writers. I just feel like a lot of these roles are so high in there that even if you're co-developing, which of course Crystal Dynamics is going to have these same job titles at their studio, right? You got to think that somewhere along the line, someone left when an important piece was needing to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like maybe this isn't a huge delay, but I think it could be a slight delay. But again, it's a rumored release date. A lot of people have felt that it's coming out 2023. Some, I think really, really wishing that their expectations said that they would come out this year, which I don't think is happening at all. But next year was a little more reasonable, but I do think that we're looking at probably 2024 before this game finally hits the shelves. Or, of course, because it's an Xbox game, hits Game Pass, and then you'll be able to play it there. One thing we do know that is coming out very soon and very, very soon is Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. And if you were nervous about where you can play this game with your friends, well, do not worry, because we have an update for you. This is an article coming from Polygon written by Michael McWherter, and it is Borderlands spinoff Tiny Tina's Wonderlands will have full cross-platform play. It goes as follows. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, the Dungeons & Dragons-inspired fantasy spinoff of Gearbox's Borderlands franchise, will feature full crossplay on all platforms when the game launches on March 25th. Gearbox President Randy Pitchford announced support for cross-platform play across PlayStation, PC, and Xbox devices in a tweet on Sunday. The announcement is notable because Gearbox's most recent game in the franchise, Borderlands 3, added crossplay nearly 2 years after the game launched, but crossplay was not supported on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 versions of the game. Borderlands 3 publisher 2K Games required Gearbox to remove crossplay support from the game for PlayStation consoles in order to obtain certification to release the patch, Pitchford had said in 2021. Now, whatever that issue had at the time, it appears that has been resolved. And just to read the tweet, Randy Pitchford had tweeted out, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands will ship on March 25th with full crossplay platform for all platforms at launch, including PlayStation. Incredible work from the engineers at Gearbox Software, and thanks to our partners at 2K Games and first parties, including Sony, for working together on this. So, Winnie, I know that you played a little bit of Borderlands the Handsome Jack Collection with one of your friends. You didn't dive too much into it, but just in general, I gotta ask, how do you feel about hearing that this game you can now play with your friends wherever they may play?
I mean, I think that's the way to go because, I mean, not everyone, first of all, not everybody can get a PS5 right now, right? That's still the case. You know, not everyone wants to play PlayStation, right? They may have Xbox or just maybe they're just PC gamers. And so, I mean, we have friends that play all of them and only some of them. And so, you know, that I think that's a great way to connect people and still be able to play with your peers. Because if you're just limiting it to, you know, one platform, that's really tough because, like, maybe if we got the PS5 one, right? Maybe none of our friends have a PS5. How are we going to play with them? You're going to be playing with strangers? I don't know. I mean, we're going to try to, you know, play with your friends, have that connection. I think this is a great way to do it.
Yeah. And you actually know from our discussions leading up to this, right? I was saying how I wanted to pick up Tiny Tina's.
Yeah.
But I was having an issue of trying to figure out where did I want to get it because I historically like playing these kind of games on my PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And I had one of my best friends that was going to get it on PlayStation. But then I had one of my other best friends that was going to get it on PC and another best friend who may get it that was going to get it on PC. So it was one of those things of do I get it on PlayStation to play with this friend or do I get it on PC to play with this friend because there's also another friend that may get it. So it's like I'd have more people on PC versus PlayStation. And now, as you said when I told you this news, you said, "Hey, now you can just get it wherever you want. You can get it on PlayStation if you want." And so I agree. I think more games should embrace this. I know in the past, one, it was difficult for engineering's sake to make these crossplays happen, but two, more of the industry was not willing to play ball, right? People want, you know, PlayStation wants you to buy a PlayStation console. Right. Xbox wants you to buy, or, you know, now not so much. They just want you to subscribe to Game Pass, but they wanted you to buy their system. And so, of course, they weren't wanting to really play ball when it came to those situations. But now I think we're in 2022. The pandemic really showed that people just want to play with their friends wherever they are playing. And I think more companies and more games need to embrace this factor. And also, I know PlayStation, again, was like the biggest hang-up in Borderlands 3. A lot of it came down to finances because PlayStation has this weird, and I don't want to go into the full details because I honestly don't remember the full details, but they have this whole weird, like, compensation that you need to do if you're going to do cross-play with them, that if PlayStation doesn't meet a certain percentage of sales, then you have to fork over an extra percentage, which doesn't make sense. But they as part of this whole announcement, it's not in this article, but Borderlands 3 is now also cross-play with everything as well. So PlayStation or Borderlands 3, you can now play on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and all the other consoles together, which, as the article said, when the cross-play first came out, that wasn't the case. So I hope more companies embrace this and move forward with that in mind. And hopefully I don't know yet because we're still discussing it, but hopefully I'll be joining into the reins when it comes out on March 23rd, even though I will, or March 25th, I think. I put it here March 23rd. Is it actually March 24th? March 25th. That's a typo. March 25th, even though I am going out of town for a bachelor party, so I can't play it on that day. Winnie, can't see it over here, but she just put like a sad face on her, on her face. So our last article that we're going to head to before we get to our upcoming releases is one that has hit a huge milestone, and that is Elden Ring. We are going to PCGamesN.com for this article. It is written by Chris Kappel, and it is: Elden Ring has sold over 12 million copies worldwide. Publisher Bandai Namco reports today, which of course this was 2 days ago now, that sales worldwide had surpassed over 12 million copies for Elden Ring across all platforms. As PC Games N reported yesterday, a significant proportion of these sales comes from the PC version, at least in Europe, where the PC release outsold the PS4 and PS5 versions combined. Just last week, it was confirmed that Elden Ring had the second biggest launch in the last 12 months, just after Call of Duty Vanguard, which had 25 days of sales in its release month, as opposed to Elden Ring's 3. And it's the biggest launch for a new IP since The Division in 2016. In a press release and thank you tweet from Bandai Namco and developer From Software, revealed that Elden Ring had sold the 12 million copies worldwide, including the digital sales, saying, quote, "It's astonishing to see just how many people have been playing Elden Ring," said director Hidetaka Miyazaki. "I'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks on behalf of the entire development team." Now, by comparison, for those that may be wondering, From Software's previous game, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, sold 5 million copies in just over a year, and Dark Souls 3 hit 3 million mark after a couple of months, reportedly, which I did look back just to double check this. Dark Souls 3 was Bandai Namco's fastest selling title in its history when it sold that 3 million copies in about a month when it released worldwide in April of 2016. So, Winnie, I know I have talked to you about picking this game up, and of course, we're at a time frame where there's so many games that are releasing, so many high public games that we haven't picked it up ourselves yet, but when you hear about this brand new title selling 12 million copies in just 3 months, or excuse me, in just 3 months, three weeks. What do you think of seeing that?
Wow. Like, wow. That's fantastic. Yeah, that tells me we probably have to play it.
Yeah. I know that this would be one that's definitely going to be, you pass me the controller, because Dark Souls and Elden Ring are very hard games.
Yeah, and that's fine.
But I guess, like, for you, right, you haven't played any of these games, but just the fact that it is a brand new IP, right? It's not an established franchise like Final Fantasy, like Pokemon, things like that. Does that make you like have a different appreciation for this type of thing, that it is something new in the sense of a whole new, again, intellectual property?
I mean, yeah, I think that's just within not even a month, right? It's already been so popular. And isn't this the game that the Game of Thrones writer helped with? George R. R. Martin, right?
George R. R. Martin.
So yes. I think that pulls in a lot of fans too, because Game of Thrones itself was huge, right? And so, I mean, I think maybe that has something, of course, has something to do with it too, but yeah.
Now, if I, because you brought that part up, so I think that's actually a really interesting aspect. For you, if you weren't living with me, right, who talks to you about games all the time, would seeing George R. R. Martin tied to this, would this have gotten you more interested to look at it? Because I know you were a big fan of Game of Thrones. I know you weren't as huge of a fan of that final season, but just in general, with George R. R. Martin tied to this, would that have made you, I guess, give it more of a look?
I think it would have, like, piques my interest more, like, hey, let's check out the trailer, see what this is about. But obviously I don't really go for hard games I don't know if I'd have the patience for it, but I would probably check out someone's stream playing it.
Yeah. I definitely, knowing you, of course, being married to you, that this game would be one of those that I think you would give up right away. But I think it was, like I said, an interesting piece because for myself, I already know From Software's legacy, so a lot of people, you know, were really looking forward to this game. But I always do forget, as I'm talking about it, that the George R.R. Martin pull with this title. So once you brought that up, I was like, yeah, that's actually really interesting. So yeah, congratulations to From Software for this title. I do really want to pick it up. So, you know, hearing you say that we might need to pick it up makes me happy. So maybe we'll be going to pick that up.
Maybe after you get through some of your backlog.
Oh, now you changed it? All right. Well, we'll see. When will I get through my backlog and when will I pick up Elden Ring? We don't know. Wow.
I meant the backlog was like a never.
Oh, okay. It's like we literally threw that whole idea out the window. Well, when will those happen? Who knows? But I do know what's coming out next week if you want to buy some games, and it starts with today. Friday, March 18th, we have Who Pressed Mute on Uncle Marcus for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Royal Frontier for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Again, that you could play digitally starting on March 15th. Siberia the World Before for PC. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe Booster Course Pack starting 1 for the Switch. On Monday, March 21st, we have iTora for PC. On Tuesday, March 22nd, we have Richie's Nightmare for Xbox One. Zero Escape the Nonary Games for Xbox Series, Xbox One. That is also coming to Game Pass, if I remember correctly. Kraken Academy for Xbox Series, Xbox One, and Switch. Rune Factory 5 for Switch. On Wednesday, March 23rd, we have A Place for the Unwilling for Xbox One. On Thursday, March 24th, we have Relayer for PS5, PS4, Hi-Rise City Early Access for PC, Norco for PC, Expedition Zero for PC, Lumotes The Master Motes Chronicles for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC, and Stadia, A Memoir Blue for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, The Ascent for PS5 and PS4. That is already out on PC and Xbox, and you can play that on Game Pass. And then on Friday, March 25th, we have Ghostwire Tokyo for PS5 and PC, Kirby and the Forgotten Land for Switch, and as we just mentioned, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. So, Winnie, is there any titles that are jumping out to you that you're interested in?
Well, you showed me Rune Factory, and that looked really cute, so probably that one. The Kirby one just looks hilarious. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind checking that one out. I know you're super excited about Ghostwire. That actually looks really cool, too, so... I don't know, that might be hard for me as well, but if there's an easy mode, I'm gonna give it a go.
Yeah, we'll see if there's an easy mode. I don't know if there is, but I definitely think, and I was actually gonna ask you as part of that, is that a game that you want to have me play while you watch? Because I know, so for those that, before I kind of get to the games that I'm interested in, Winnie and I play a lot of games together, and there are certain games that we actually play together, like you either have the controllers at the same time or we pass the controllers back and forth. And then there's games that Winnie and I play together, but it's mostly just me playing and Winnie just wants to watch it. And so I give the example, right? Resident Evil. It always starts off with we're playing together, but then you just hand me the controller and you like
it's
take
so
over.
Scary.
Yeah. So is Ghostwire, because Ghostwire is supposed to be a scary game too, is that one that you would want to play together, but mostly it's going to be me playing?
That's probably what's going to happen. I feel like Relayer was something either I was excited for or you were excited for.
I was excited for it.
Because we had talked about that one, but I don't remember much about it.
Yeah, that is the strategy RPG that is coming from Clouded Leopard Entertainment, if I remember correctly. And it is a like visual novel strategy RPG. I haven't been able to get it out yet, but I was planning originally, which is why you probably remember it most, I was going to do a preview of the game because there is a demo out currently that you can go and play if you want to go play for that. And again, that is coming out for PS5 and PS4. So the demo is only on PS5 and PS4. But I was diving into that demo, and it is fun. It is definitely, though, as I described to you, and I'll describe to you guys, you gotta be at least somewhat of a fan of a visual novel, because there is a lot of story, and in the story, it is a lot of reading text. Now, let me just go one step further. All of the text is voiced. So there is, everything is voiced, at least up to the point that I've played. However, there is no like full animations. There is no like you walking around a world to get from story to story. It's just a lot of story playing in front of you. And then you go to do missions, equipment, things like that. So that is the case with that game. But as I was saying, when it comes to, I would get to the games that I'm most excited for, Rune Factory 5, I'm actually really excited for, because I've never played it, but it does look really cool. And you being a huge Animal Crossing fan, I thought that was a great mix of the two things that you and I do both like. You're a huge RPG fan too. You don't play them as much anymore because of the time investment, but you are a big Animal Crossing fan. So Rune Factory 5 is right there. Relayer, another one that I'm looking really forward to. Ghostwire Tokyo, as you know, has been like one of my top games that I'm really looking forward to this year. And then Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. I'm not a huge Borderlands fan, but the setting, the place, everything about that just seems really cool. So that is about all that we have here for the episode. So Winnie, as I do with every episode, I ask you what you want to leave our listeners with. So I want to ask two questions. One, how did it feel to finally finish your first podcast? And then two, what do you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think it went well. It was fun getting to talk with you about games outside our usual casual conversations.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was cool. I really liked the Hogwarts Legacy State of Play. So I think everyone should go check out that video. Check it out on Jeremy's channel.
Yeah. Yeah. So go check it out on Press Start. We will again have that up. So react, watch it, like it, comment, share it with your friends, get it everywhere, because yeah, it was really cool. Mm-hmm. But as always, everyone, that is what we have here for the episode. So I've been one of your co-hosts, Jeremy Culver, aka Darcy, and this has been the queen behind the team, my wife Winnie. We really enjoy bringing this to you each and every Friday. As always, everybody, stay hydrated, stay healthy, stay safe, and keep on gaming. We'll see you guys on the next episode.